Here we go.
Jake and Josh are here to analyze the game they love for the team they love.
This is another Dolphins podcast.
Here's your host, Jake Mendel and Josh Houts.
Thanks for tuning into another Dolphins podcast. The Dolphins sit at 2-4 following last week's ugly 16-10 loss to the Colts. And based on the YouTube comments we're getting at the 560 WQAM channel and the emails we're receiving at anotherdolphinspodcast@gmail.com, some fans are digesting this loss a lot harder than the others. I'm just going to leave it at that. We have a loaded show for you guys today as Dustin Godin returns, joining Josh and I ahead of Miami's Week 8 bout against the Arizona Cardinals. Dustin, 2-4. Don't get it twisted. 2-4 is a terrible, terrible spot to be in. But Tua Tagovailoa is back at practice. Is that a sign of hope?
I would say yes. I mean, even if you're looking at our previous seasons and you're the pessimist that talks about, oh, you can't beat good teams, you can't whatever, you know. We have 11 games left. 8 of them are against teams with losing records. So even if you're that pessimist, what would, you know, you think the record would be? Now, one of those teams is San Francisco. Maybe they won't have a losing record by the time we get to them. The Shanahan scheme is kind of hurting across the league right now, except for Green Bay, really. But the question is, can we go 7-4? I could see that. And yeah, sure, that's only 9-8. Or maybe we have a game in there. We, you know, as Dolphin fans, what are we not, other than beating teams that we don't necessarily expect to win and then just getting housed by a team we expect to blow out? Like, so stuff like that's going to happen. And, you know, unless it's the Bills, then we just get housed. You know, I think it's realistic that with Tua back, we can go 7-4 or 8-3. And I think it's going to, you know, be a situation where it may not always be pretty. I think there's still going to be warts on that offense, just as there was in Jacksonville. But I think a lot of that comes from a deeper issue on the roster.
I think we should all be excited. I know that the YouTube comments are telling us, you know, oh man, you guys are crazy. We're 2-4, right where we expected. I'm like, I think you need to quote us on some of that stuff. I don't know that we said some of the things that we're being accused of, but we got Tua Tagovailoa back. And like we say all the time, we should not be, we do this, we come on here, we talk podcasts all season long. We don't want to fold this early in the season. You're getting your quarterback back. Why not string together some games? And it just so happens to be against the Arizona Cardinals, against Kyler Murray, and I believe Call of Duty comes out as well. So stars are aligning for the Dolphins here, and who knows what can happen if you string together some wins, as we saw. What was it, Tua's rookie season, or was it second year Tua? Didn't they string together like 8-9 or something crazy like that? So it can be done, and we've seen it done with lesser weapons. So, yeah, why not us? But at the same time, I mean, like you said, Dustin, we are the team that can beat the good teams, and we're going to falter against some of these lesser opponents. So whatever it is, we're along for the ride, but getting to it back definitely helps.
I was talking with Dustin before the show here, Josh, and I want to get your thoughts about this. We think that there's a true way to tell someone's Dolphin fandom here, and it's a two-part situation here. This week against the Arizona Cardinals, I see there's going to be some rust. I think that it's going to look a little ugly at times, but I think Tua, the way that offense operates with him behind center, you can sweep a lot of that under the rug. Hey, Tyreek Hill's down there somewhere, a 60-yard pass, something like that. I think this would be a great opportunity for the Dolphins to come back out, get within one game of 500, and really get involved in the 2024 NFL season. I think that's a good starting point for most Dolphin fans. And the only reason that's the right starting point is because the ending point, Josh, if the Dolphins don't win this week, which I do think they will, the Buffalo Bills next week are looking like trouble. So there's a two-part story unfolding here where the Dolphins don't have a lot of time to get their act together, and there's danger afoot.
Yeah, and I know Tyreek Hill saying, you know, make sure you start him in fantasy this week, but like you both have kind of touched on, it's going to take a little bit for this whole thing to come together and, you know, for Tua Tagovailoa to get back in the rhythm that he had. So I think I tweeted out, I don't even want to predict what this could do to our mentals, you know, if they somehow lose to the Cardinals, because like you said, then you got the Buffalo Bills and then you're what? Oh man, you're 2-5, you're playing the Bills, then you're most likely 2-6, and then we're just spiraling out of control. So as much as this maybe doesn't seem like, you know, a must-win game, when you're a favor to beat the Cardinals, when this looks like one of those teams that you should I guess, should be able to beat. We want to see what Tua Tagovailoa can do. So I'm trying not to get too far ahead of the, you know, put the horse too far ahead of the carriage, but it's hard not to get excited when you have this matchup looking right in the face.
Tua met with the media for the first time in roughly a month on Monday. He was asked if he'll wear the Guardian cap. One word answer, he said no. He was asked why. He said personal choice. He seemed very defensive throughout the entire interview. The one line that really stuck with me and it kind of rubbed me the wrong way was he was asked, what have you learned about this process? And he simply said that it's not good to get concussions. Dustin, what'd you take away from that interview? Your initial thoughts on Tua just reacting, coming back, joining the team after a third diagnosed concussion since joining the Dolphins?
Yeah, I mean, when I watched that interview or that press conference, my initial thoughts are he is pissed. And the reading, you know, he didn't outright say anything along these lines, but reading between the lines, you know, for me, I read it as he doesn't feel he should have been put on IR. I think he thinks that the optics of the situation from the 2022 Cincinnati concussion have made him get treated unfairly. And to a degree, he's right. I mean, you don't see other quarterbacks that have had multiple concussions recently get the same kind of scrutiny. I'm looking at David Carr. Derek Carr. I mean, he had three concussions last year, I'm pretty sure. And you don't hear about it, you know. So to a degree, he is correct. And if he's symptom-free the next day, and he's been throwing for 5 weeks, he clearly feels he could have played. And he probably sit there and says, man, we've gone on this, you know, this rough spat here where, you know, our offenses look completely inept and I could have helped, but the optics of this thing is not letting it happen. And then, I've got a whole thoughts on Guardian caps and whether or not they're effective, and, you know, at scale, if we want to get into that.
Yeah. Share your thoughts on that. And then we'll have Josh jump in. Sorry, Josh.
Yeah, sure. So the Guardian caps, they act as an additional cushion, but the way cushion works is that at impact, there's an instant change in velocity, and that's what causes the brain to hit the inside of the skull, right? And so the theory behind the Guardian cap is that there's this padding here. It's going to add what's called a Bezier curve, and it adds a quantitative ease in, ease out effect on that. So that instant moment of velocity becomes wider and longer, allowing the brain time to catch up. Now, the problem is the amount of velocity, there's a threshold, and that threshold is based upon the thickness and the density of that padding. And of course, those two things are related in weight. Now, these things aren't that heavy. They're like maybe a pound, right? Like somewhere just under a pound. The only studies you can really find out there have to deal with basically linemen, like the sub micro concussions that happen on every single play when linemen hit their heads against each other. And I think the reason why the other studies are so inconclusive is because when you get over the velocity threshold, probably on these plays where, hey, a running back and a linebacker smacking right into each other, that's a fast impact. The head hitting the ground, that's a fast impact. The density is probably not enough on those Guardian caps to actually do anything at those speeds. And so to make them safe, they're going to be so heavy that they're going to start causing neck injuries. And I think that's where we're at. I think the experts can't agree that there's any real benefit. And so players saying that, you know, there is a benefit, or I'm not going to wear it because of that, I think they're well within their right to do so.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. I'm glad you broke that down. For me, just hearing him, I guess I'm not really opposed to him not wearing it. It was more so the whole just nope. Like, it was kind of like, you know, I'm 38 almost now, so I can sit here and say, you know, young Tua, what are you doing? You sound just arrogant, like, you know, like you know better than everyone else, right? Because that's how it seemed. Like, nope, why? Personal choice. He's just like, it just seems so like, you know what, just leave me alone. And I can understand it, right? He's heard everyone speak on this matter for him. He was supposed to retire last year. He's now supposed to retire this year. Everyone has an opinion about him except, you know, letting him actually speak. So I can understand why he's frustrated, but you know, and I can also also understand why the guardian cap has doesn't really have necessarily a huge factor, right? It wasn't going to stop him based on that hit he took from DeMar Hamlin. And I believe Jake, you had written down here, and several people have touched on it, the helmet he wears is almost more, I believe, more safe than the actual guardian cap. So he is taking the right safety precautions. Sliding would absolutely help. But I was a little bit turned off being, again, older, thinking, wow, he seems just so like he knows what he's talking about. But at the same time, you can see why he has a little bit of that F you, just leave me alone, let me play football. The biggest thing and the thing that scares me the most was this whole, you know, I love football till the death of me. Like, I just feel like that's just some bad omen to even put out there in this universe. And I hated that.
The decision to put Tua on IR, the first, when it happened, I was in North Carolina. I was with a buddy, and like, you were just devastated. You hurt for him. Like, I was thinking about the Tua who was sitting there after his first game, just on the phone in the middle of Hard Rock Stadium. Nobody else was in the entire stadium, just on the phone with it. Like, you grow with these people and you know, grow to appreciate them and you feel for them. So the first thought I had was just like, Jesus, I hope he's okay. Like, I want him to feel okay. I want him to be okay. Cat on the podcast the next morning, he said it right, and Tua has no way, like he cannot be mad about the IR decision. He made the dumbest decision possible by running headfirst at DeMar Hamlin. When you get that contract that's worth $50 million, I think Cat might have even called it selfish. That's what Tua was against the Buffalo Bills. At this point, if he's going to act like this, we got to kind of put the line in the sand and say, hey, Tua, like, we understand that you probably didn't have to go on IR, and I think there's a big conversation to be had about the optics. But you're putting yourself in these situations, and you got to be smarter about that. And man, I can't help but think about McDaniel sitting there late at night and thinking, like, what if I see myself on a documentary talking about God knows what in 20 years? So I think there's something about that. I don't want to get too far down that dark road, but I think when McDaniel's put in a spot like that and you're set and you have some sort of evidence, let's just give him time to just adjust to everything. I get the people who say, like, let's not put him on IR, but God, man, there's so many things that happen where I think that's the fate you need to accept when that's the hand you're dealt.
I was going to let Dustin talk. I thought Dustin might have had something to say there. Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to disagree with that. And you just hope that, you know, hopefully there's, you know, this is one of those instances where we're looking back at it like, okay, Tua was injury prone throughout his entire career. This was that changing point where hopefully, you know, God forbid nothing ever happens. But man, please slide for God's sake. And you guys both touched on, you know, a little bit of that annoyance has to be from seeing Josh Allen, right? Take a brutal hit, go to the tent, come right back out and play, right? I mean, things like that you see when you're you're on IR for 4 weeks. I mean, and then he says it's his ankle. I mean, you see that and you see everyone just kind of brushed under the rug because it's Josh Allen. And then, you know, you might even be a little bit more annoyed than the Tua Tagovailoa already was. So many things are going into that. We all are rooting for him, hoping that, you know, this isn't something that we continue to talk about, but just hope he learns to slide and hopes that, you know, this was that changing point, but he just seems like he's just, you know, stuck in his ways.
Yeah, I think one thing too that we need to talk about when it comes to Tua's concussions too is not all concussions are the same. Every concussion is its own concussion. And then on top of that, probably one of the reasons why, you know, the Tua concussions are so talked about is because of the optics, the way his body responds physically to getting them. The problem with that is you ask the experts, they do not judge the severity of concussions based on stuff like that. They just don't. They judge the severity of concussions based on the brain scans, based on how the body responds over the coming or the subsequent days after the incident. So when I hear things like, he was symptom-free the next day, that would indicate that it is probably a grade zero, maybe a grade one concussion. Now, what he suffered in Cincinnati, that's probably closer to a grade three. He was out cold for like over a minute, and he had to be hospitalized. Like, that's a much more severe concussion, and that definitely required ample time to stay off the field. And then the other thing that we should talk about is how I keep hearing it on X, on Reddit. I keep hearing it over and over again about how the more concussions you have, the more likely it is to get more concussions. And it's just not true. The reality is you get a concussion on day one, and within a certain period of time, you are more likely to have concussions. But eventually, your brain will heal and you're back to baseline. And so we keep hearing this thing like, oh, he's had three or four concussions in the last 3 years. Now he's even more likely to get him going forward. No. Once he's healed, he's back to baseline. Now, his baseline is unfortunately higher than, you know, other people, because I mean, I think I am one of the people that thinks the Josh Allen thing was probably at least a small concussion. But the reality is, if that was Tua, he'd be probably a very bad concussion.
And two, just both of them happening in prime time in front of everyone, you're not going to get any leeway, any sort of benefit in the doubt in those scenarios. It's been very tough. I want to go back to that one comment he made there, where it just seemed like very football guy-y, where he said, "What did you learn from this whole experience?" And he basically said that it's not good to get concussions. That did feel like someone who's been asked this quite a bit. And it does make you feel that he's had different conversations with his family, with the players, because I do not see any world where he said something like that, that it's just not good to get concussions. You can tell this is someone who's fed up, but I really do think he had those heart-to-hearts in other scenarios where he went into more detail. Overall, guys, I mean, in general, I hope Tua stays healthy. It's absolutely exciting as all hell to have him back. You feel good about the lineup. But guys, it is very concerning that you lose one player for 4 weeks and everything goes to shit. The Dolphins start averaging less than 10 points per game. Dustin, we wanted to have you on here to really start to digest some of the roster construction of this version of the Miami Dolphins and some of the developing issues here. And I think what makes the issues so annoying for both us and a lot of fans, Jen Forbush specifically, Chris Greer's been here for 8 years, and it's just getting frustrating to the points where you think you'd be learning from your mistakes. You'd touch a hot pen and you'd say, "That's hot. I don't want to do that again." But he continues to just keep touching. Maybe he's holding the pan from the wrong part at this point. We'll have Josh teach him how to hold a pan. But Dustin, I want you to start that. I'm going to lay the floor there and let you take over.
Chuckles, I think you guys are a lot more worried about their offensive line than we are. Chuckles. I think that will be forever seared into my brain as the single most, the biggest reason to fire Chris Greer. There are a lot of things you can say about Chris Greer that are good as far as roster construction, that he works with his coaches, that he can identify skill position players pretty well, I would say. But the guy has an Achilles heel on the O-line. And instead of owning up to it and admitting it, he chooses to gaslight people. Meanwhile, I think it's like the last 3 or 4 years, we haven't had a backup quarterback be able to play for longer than a game and a half before they also get injured. So, you know, are all of these injuries at quarterback just flukes, or should you be more worried about the situation? That's like one big thing. And don't get me wrong, Mike McDaniel has a lot of culpability in the problems with this roster construction. It's not going to be popular, what I'm about to say, but it is a bit of a hot take. And the issue is the defenses in the NFL have changed. They have modified, and finesse offenses are now having a hard time across the league. Patrick Mahomes has thrown more interceptions than touchdowns this year. Mm-hmm. What? You couldn't have told me that before the season, and I would have believed you.
They're undefeated, too. It's insane.
Don't even get me started on that.
Hopkins, DeAndre.
Oh, yeah. They did get Hopkins now, huh? Anyway, if you look across the league, can you tell me another team that builds their entire offense on sub-6-foot receivers?
Make 6'3" receivers relevant again, said Erica Zucama on Twitter.
Oh, did he say it? That's amazing. I love that. Because I'm
and then they signed up Tyreek Black just today, who's 6'3", and I looked it up, and Erica Zucama is exactly 6'2", according to Google. So I had to laugh. They're like, okay, we agree with you, we're gonna find some guy that's probably gonna play before.
Nice. But here's where the unpopular statement's gonna come. We have the very best wide receiver in the NFL in Tyreek Hill. We have an amazing wide receiver in Jaylen Waddle. We have two fifths of a receiver in Odell Beckham that can maybe play some X receiver, but he's also kind of small and shifty. So when I look at this roster, we don't have a possession receiver. We don't have a guy that on cover two can run those slants well. And not even just well, but like get off press and you know, get those in-breaking routes. And additionally, the offensive line is an issue because the way the defenses are playing us with this cover two is causing the middle of the field to be very muddy. Now, we have, because of our roster construction, we've dealt with this muddiness with the cheat motion. Like, the cheat motion is both a boon and a crutch. Like, we absolutely need it because of our roster construction, but it also is very good for us because it helps us dissect the defense. But our offensive line doesn't really give us time to get to those second window reads. So, like, all you need as a defense to take us out when we're not able to run these motions correctly. Hey, linebackers, you're in zone. Hey, safeties, you're in cover two, middle field open. Hey, cornerbacks, you just stick on, you know, Waddle and Hill. Well, those linebackers are going to shade over to the tight ends, to the slot receiver, and you got to wait for the second window in those situations, and we just can't do it. So going through this whole season, you look at all the screens in the beginning of the season, even with Tua, like, McDaniel is coaching scared of the defense, in my opinion, or play calling scared of the defense. He doesn't have an answer for this situation right now. And I think a lot of the league also doesn't have the answer, but they need to find it.
What I think is so interesting about the development is the idea, like, people wanted the Dolphins to sign an offensive lineman so Tua could go from, like, needing 2.2 seconds to throw in order to go from, and maybe like 2.8 seconds, and what a world of difference that would make. And that isn't necessarily the reason why Miami needed help on the offensive line. It wasn't the scenarios where Miami is at its best, they can be even better. I think last year we saw them push the chips all the way in. Like, if you want to have Tyreek at his best, Waddle at his best, this offense going as fast as possible, this is how we do it. With Tua, this is how we do it and maximize the efficiency as close to 100% as possible. Well, once Tua's out of the lineup, the decision-making goes down. And once the decision-making goes down, the processing goes down. And when the processing goes down, the quarterback is holding onto the ball longer. And we see scenarios, Skylar Thompson gets sacked 5 times, breaks ribs. We see scenarios that Tyler Huntley runs out of the pocket. And all we heard for weeks and weeks is that how Tyler Huntley is supposed to extend plays. Two extended plays come to mind. First one, it was 2nd and 2 from the 2-yard line. He rolls out just trying to escape pressure, gets sacked on an 8-yard loss. Mike McDaniel outcoached that with a great screen to Jonnu Smith for the touchdown. And then the play Tyler Huntley got hurt on. He was trying to get rid of the ball. He threw it too late. He couldn't protect his body, so he fell on his shoulder. So it's just so interesting that the Miami Dolphins don't have the receivers to help a backup quarterback. They don't have the offensive linemen to give him that added time. But instead, you're investing in the Odell Beckham and the Jonnu Smith. You're investing future draft picks to bring in someone like Jalen Wright. It's so interesting to me that the weakness of this offensive line isn't in getting Tua those extra 6 seconds. It's just giving everyone else a little bit of extra room for error. At least I feel that way. Please let me know if I'm being a crazy person.
I was just gonna agree with you, Jake. That yeah, that is absolutely the case, because even last year, like, everything about our scheme is designed to diminish the responsibility of the offensive line. So, you know, to me, that's coaching scared of your offensive line. If you look back in 2021, we didn't run nearly the amount of cheat motion that we ran in 2022. We ran a lot more RPO in 2022 and then 2023. 2023, we had a lot more cheat motion than 2022, where we ran a mixture between cheat motion and RPO. But again, it all comes down to, do we have the time to get to those third check down reads? Do we have the amount of time to get to, maybe the first read is the read, but you have to wait for the second or maybe third window of opportunity on that route. We just don't have that amount of time. And as you mentioned, without Tua and the way that he layers the ball in there with anticipation, you know, these see it, throw it guys are not ever going to look good in our offense.
Josh, when you look at this group in general and you look at the moves the Dolphins made in the offseason, there were some home runs. I'd love to do a show, dive a little deeper on someone like Aaron Brewer. That's someone we had some doubts on, but he's been fantastic for the Dolphins. I think Jordan Brooks has played pretty well too. But when you see these errors and you see how this roster is constructed, where, I mean, it just seems like at times the Dolphins are focused on getting the heated seats instead of making sure your engine turns on when it's cold. They're too focused on having a sunroof when your entire front window is shattered, we'll even say. What's one move you look at during the offseason that you're like, maybe we should have done something a little different here?
Well, I mean, another name you want to throw out there was Kendall Fuller. That was another guy I was thinking of. I mean, you guys both talked about the offensive line, the quarterback situation. I mean, there are so many different moves that we could sit here and run through our head. I mean, even just relying on Odell Beckham Jr. this late into the year. I mean, there are so many mistakes. And I think the thing that irks me the most with, we're sitting here talking, and at the end of the year, we'll have this Chris Greer conversation. But a lot of these guys on the roster are either guys he traded for, where are these draft picks over the last few years? They're not making many impact plays, right? We're not seeing my boy Channing Tindall out there. We're not seeing Eric Ezukama. I mean, they just signed, Black for that. So there's different guys that you wished would have stepped up. You thought that maybe, whether it was through the draft or these players that he saw in phrases that can make more of a noise, it just did not come about. So again, we both have egg on our face for Aaron Brewer, but when we look back on, not having a better option at QB2 is obviously going to be the biggest mistake. And it's kind of funny because the Dolphins went out there and got a guy that a lot of people thought, might have been that answer at the beginning of the season, right?
And what I think is so interesting is the issues are compounding. Now, Dustin, if I said that, let's say that instead of Chop Robinson, and I'm not closing the book on Chop Robinson, even though he let Trey Sermon walk through a tackle for 13 yards on for a first. Either way. Let's say the Dolphins drafted a guard in the first round. They traded up. They even traded down. If they have a better offensive line and they can hold up for that extra second, wouldn't it also make sense that you don't need Julian Hill out there blocking as often as he is and compounding with his pre-snap penalties and those issues, those drops too, where you're asking that guys to do these things where, don't get me wrong, I think having a blocking tight end is important. I think McDaniel's scheme does it greatly, but when you're leaning so deep into that, you need to rely on this guy and say, damn man, you have 8 penalties in 6 games? We got to keep putting you out there, though, because we have nothing else to do. That's just such an awful way to construct a roster where it's crazy to look at.
Yeah, I mean, for the record, in the long term, I have a lot of hope for Chop Robinson. I see a lot of really good things, but the night of and still to this day, I do feel there were better options on the table that fit what we were trying to do this year. Having Chop has proven to be a bit more impactful this year just because Phillips is down now again. That's not something we necessarily predicted, going into the season. But still, Graham Barton or I even would have one guy that I really wanted to get in the draft was Legette, for the same reasons that, I was talking about before with the receivers. I think having that possession body wide receiver is really, or not having him is really holding us back. And I'm pretty sure, we were on the show and I was talking about how we shouldn't extend Hill and how we should be signing Waddle, but training him up to replace Hill and get a different receiver that we train up to replace. Hill was on his last year of guaranteed money. It made a lot of sense to me to not extend him because of this weird roster construction. And unfortunately, we're seeing what that looks like when you don't have the superpower of anticipation. And CJ Beathard, or Beathard, right?
Beathard.
Yeah. CJ Beathard, for a couple weeks now, I've been going to the games with my family and I'm like, when we were signing Huntley, I was like, no, we should have signed Beathard. I want a guy that has demonstrable experience in this scheme. And, in 2020, he had 6 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. He had, I think in total 18 touchdowns to 13 interceptions in his entire time at San Francisco. He's not a savior, but he's a backup. He would look much better.
More than 10 points.
Yeah.
And to be fair, that's also what makes things a little frustrating here. I think each of the last 2 weeks, the Dolphins had a pathway to score him over 20 points. I think we can't ignore the fact that I think McDaniels has done a decent job making Tyler Huntley comfortable enough in this type of scheme to go out there. And then the penalties, the missed field goals, it just kind of hurt them too, where it's just so many different issues just coming to the forefront all at once in these scenarios.
Yeah, I mean, McDaniel has his issues at play calling this year. I mean, but when I watched the All 22, I see a lot of plays that are just left on the field. And at that point, you know, is it the players or is it the coach? You know, I've seen, like, there is going to be a level of slop even with Tua. There was a level of slop against Jacksonville. There was a level of slop before he got hurt in Buffalo, because the offense is struggling right now to find an answer for a specific scenario that defenses are running like 70% of the time against us. But here's the thing. Tua was opportunistic. When he noticed Hill streaking open, he would hit it. When he noticed Waddle streaking open, he would hit it. And these guys are not doing that. So is it a problem with the play calling, or is it a problem with the players understanding? And there is a balance there. Like, Huntley was very new to the offense. Maybe you dumb it down. And I think we did that. I think basically ignoring Waddle and Hill last game for Janu was a big help for Huntley. And maybe we should have done that a little sooner. But, you know, c'est la vie, right?
Yeah, c'est la vie. And another thing we got to remember with guys like Huntley, and, you know, is the fact that he's only been here for, what, now it's 6 weeks? I mean, he was never going to be able to replicate Tua Tagovailoa. You know, there was absolutely plays that he left behind on the field. So you're hoping that Tua could come in and mask some of that. You know, you're talking about Julian Hill being penalized infinite times and all those other, you know, pre-snap things. How much of that can Tua hopefully, you know, right that ship and get these guys lined up correctly? Because, again, we all can say that Tua Tagovailoa is the best, leader for this offense, the best quarterback. So, again, kind of excited to see what happens. But I do think the C.J. Beathard, I would have liked that signing, you know, 4 weeks ago. I think maybe having him instead of Tyler Huntley, maybe we could have salvaged some of these games. But I'm saying that now in hindsight. Before, I was pretty, you know, kind of stoked for Snoop Huntley. And I think I have egg on my face.
Here's the thing with Huntley, like, you, for me, whenever I'm looking at, you know, players to bring in, I don't understand why more teams don't, like, if you have a player X at your quarterback position, why don't you just try to find poor man's player X for your backup? Like, I don't understand. A lot of teams do it where they will completely change, like, have a completely different style player as their backup. And it's just like, that doesn't make sense. You have 10 other players on the roster, and you have to train out muscle memory of every one of them to change the scheme. Like, it makes no sense to me.
One other position I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on here, running back. The Dolphins are looking like they have a three-headed monster when healthy in that backfield. Jalen Wright, Raheem Mostert, Devon Achane, all three were averaging close to 5 yards per carry, I believe, last week against the New England Patriots, against the Titans. Colts. Sorry, they're all stringing together at this point. Guys, do you think that Jalen Wright deserves a bigger role in this offense? You think about it. You have Raheem Mostert is kind of the RB1 where we've been hoping Achane turns into that little bit of a receiver. But how is Mike McDaniel really going to get all these guys involved moving forward? Because I think we've seen they all have juice and should be a part of the offense.
So here's the thing. We do have a three-headed monster at running back. We have a situation where all three of them have some pretty differing skill sets. And it's nice that they all combine into a room. But I'm kind of at the point where I'm done seeing Achane try to run it between the tackles when we have Jalen Wright. To me, Mostert is our best outside zone running back right now. And Jalen Wright is our best inside zone / gap system running back. And then you have Achane, who is probably maybe our best receiver right now. Like, it's like he, to me, Achane has become this player that we've seen it with other guys, you know, that Joker role. You play him in the slot sometimes, you play him on the perimeter sometimes, you line him up at running back sometimes, you move him around and you scare the defense. To me, that's where Achane is optimized. I think he just has some vision issues, you know, when it comes to that. Like, I remember the first game with Snoop, it was like 4th and 1 and we tried to run it on a inside zone from shotgun. And I just remember A-Tran trying to bounce it to the outside, and Snoop Huntley, who had been there for 6 days, had to physically point out the B gap to A-Tran before he tried to run it up there. And we didn't get the 1 yard because of that. And I just, that is now seared into my brain of like, why? So they all have very, very strong skills, but in different areas, I would say.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'm hearing you talk about A-Chan, and I'm sitting here having an epiphany. All this time we were looking for our Deebo Samuels. Devon A-Chan, our Deebo Samuel, he can line up in the back, can do a little bit. So where was I going with that? Oh, I like what you said about Jalen Redd. I absolutely think he should be that guy that runs between the tackles, almost more so maybe even than Raheem Mostert at this point. You mentioned him being that guy that can bounce outside. But I think those two guys should be kind of taking on that brunt of that workload, taking on all those hits, and then you can use Devon Achane, whether it's creating mismatches in the slot, you know, using those motions and things like that. But I think having him out there with a Mostert, with a Wright, you know, that just causes all sorts of complications for that defense. So whatever it takes to get Jalen Wright more than 6 offensive snaps, I'd love to see it. And again, I think he might be our best pass protector as well. So he's going to be out there in those situations. So a lot of good talented players with different skill sets. Kind of seems like maybe Raheem Mostert's kind of like the best of both worlds, but excited to see this group moving forward.
Raheem Mostert's like the jack of all trades, master none, just for the scenario of what the Miami Dolphins are looking for at running back. It seemed like when Achane was trying to run inside against the Colts, he just looked a little tentative, a little slow, a little concerned as he was popping up the middle. So it was nice to see him kind of bounce back there, especially in the second half. But I'm really interested to see how Mike McDaniel goes about this. And so is my fantasy football team. So I'll just leave that one there at that. Something else I wanted to bring up here. Mike McDaniel spoke with the media on Wednesday. We hear Tua's coming back, but he says that that is likely to be the only player to be activated off IR PUP this week. Bradley Chubb, Isaiah Wynn, River Craycraft, Patrick McMorris, and I think I'm forgetting one more player are all still out. Dustin, as you just look at that list, what's the biggest thing missing from the Miami Dolphins?
Well, we pretty desperately need Chubb or Wynn back, in my opinion. I know, and then I think, didn't we just bring back Cam Smith?
Oh, that's okay. Right, too. Yeah, he was activated earlier this week. My bad.
Yeah, so Cam Smith might be able to help out, you know, if we have another injury to Fuller or something. But yeah, right now, you know, we're getting a lot of pressure, but we're not getting finish as far as pass rush goes. We really need to bring it home and get those sacks up. Part of that is on Chop, because Chop, like, Chop has an issue where he hasn't, it's like his wrap up when he gets to the quarterback is kind of wonky right now. He gets to the quarterback, but he doesn't quite get him under control, if that makes sense. So we really need to be able to close out. Like, if you can get a sack on a drive, I think it's like 75% chance that drive ends in a set of downs. So we need to get more of those. And then Wynn. I'm still forever baffled at whatever happened with Isaiah Wynn. Like, we re-signed him, and now what, he's gonna miss half the season? Like,
at least,
I don't know.
Yeah, at least. Mm-hmm. I kind of joke, though. You know, everybody talks about Odell Beckham. I think River Craycraft, I think he can bring a lot to this offense. And we always see him standing next to Tua Tagovailoa. So that's another name. But I absolutely think Bradley Chubb, when you're looking at this list, he has to be the one that's going to kind of come in here and hopefully, you know, get them sacks working. He liked one of my tweets the other day from that Zach Sealer one about him diving. So that's just going to be my way of saying that sources are saying he's close to returning. So if he's liking it, he's got to be hungry. He's got to be hungry to get back out there.
Dustin, you going to the game on Sunday?
Yep.
At halftime, Tim Bowens is going into the Ring of Honor, the honor roll, legend, whatever you want to call it, for the Miami Dolphins. He becomes the 24th player to enter the ring. I'll leave it to either of you guys. He is the first guy going into the Ring of Honor in a decade, boys. A decade. Do you know who the last player was?
Well, let's see. I was probably at the game for it if it was a decade. So
honestly, there's a chance I was there too, to be honest.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, it might have been that LA Chargers game web weekend. Oh,
Who's guessing? I was just going to say not Ricky.
Zonka?
Not Ricky, because it should be.
Not Ricky. He's somebody he played a while ago.
Was it Zonka?
No. Zonka was one of the first four to be into the ring. The first four in were all Miami's first four Hall of Famers. Zonka, Greasy, Warfare, and Langer. Other hint, he played the same position as Tim Bones. It's not the Kama Kunsu.
Yeah. I was going to say Manny Fernandez, but that's forever ago, right?
Nope, you nailed it.
Is that who it is?
Josh, that's who it is.
See, I was going to even guess that earlier, but I don't know why his name even popped in. I should have. Okay, so my bad. I should have got to be confident.
You know what happened, Josh? You know why it popped into your head? Because I asked you a question and you knew the answer.
First time, and I was still scared to say it.
But man, that'll be a lot of fun. Yeah, 2014 for Manny Fernandez. So I hope that's fun at halftime. I hope you're enjoying a good game. How you feeling about it? Can I get some thoughts from you on a Wednesday afternoon?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Cardinals defense has some things that we can exploit as far as the quality of their play recently. I still think there's going to be some slop, but I think there will be enough, you know, on our side that we take advantage of that. You know, I think we come away with a win, you know, in this game. And then, you know, who knows what's going to happen in the Buffalo game. Cause that's in Buffalo, right? Yeah. Oh yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I was there when he concussed himself in that Buffalo game.
Freaking brutal. and you know something too, at least since that Buffalo game, every single Miami Dolphins quarterback, every time they've wanted to throw it out of bounds, and even when they don't want to throw it out of bounds, they make sure that ball gets out of bounds.
Yeah. And sometimes they do that on, you know, third down when we're trying to win the game and, you know, it's 5 yards behind the receiver out of bounds.
It was his birthday. He was giving him a birthday present. I think I saw it was Malik Washington's birthday. He's just yeeting that shit out of bounds. I was like, what? Oh, my God. Come on, man.
Josh, I know we'll be doing our another preview later in the week, but I think when we do a trio here, I do a very bad job of stepping on your toes here, so I want to give you the last word here. How you're feeling about Tua, listening to him talk, listening to McDaniel talk today? Let me get the Josh vibes entering the Cardinals game.
I mean, they shouldn't be this, but I'm getting excited. Like, my kids are at the point where, like, all they've heard me talk about since they were born, I guess, must have been Tua. They've seen pictures of him or, you know, all the talk has been, because they're literally like, yo, did Tua come back this week? And I'm like, you know, just looking at him with those, like, little cartoon eye emojis, like, oh, this is so cute. So I'm excited for him to come back. Again, I'm tempering expectations. We've seen throughout history that, you know, it's going to take a lot for him to stay healthy, the duration, but this offense is going to look much different with him out there. I hate how everyone's continuing to move the goalposts, right? I mean, that has to be another reason why he's frustrated, but excited to see if he can turn this thing around, right? He's getting paid to do that. You have to eventually be able to beat Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, CJ Stroud. The list goes on and on of AFC quarterbacks. If he's the guy, he should be able to pull us out of this rut. So let us pray.
Perfectly said. Dustin, Joshua, this was a lot of fun. And thank you all so much for listening to another Dolphins podcast. If you're liking what you're listening to, please, please, please hit that subscribe button. And if you hit review, leave a review, leave a comment. Helps others find the show, and we appreciate that too. If you want to join us face-to-face, 560 WQAM YouTube channel. But thank you all so much for joining us on another Dolphins podcast. We will talk to you soon, but until then,
fins up.